Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
First, these kids were YouTube stars. Then they sang on TV at the Oscars. Next up, an even bigger screen. I'm John Schaefer, and coming up on Soundcheck, the new film Once in a Lullaby documents the adventures of an elementary school chorus from PS22 in Staten Island. We'll hear about that and other musical offerings at this year's Tribeca Film Festival. Later, the adventures of the guitar duo Rodrigo y Gabriela. Their journey has taken them from their native Mexico City to Dublin and recently to Havana to collaborate with a Cuban orchestra. They'll join us to play songs from their new album called Area 52 live in the studio. All of that on Soundcheck after the news.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality.
Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen is almost like a little movie in a song. Now there's a big movie about the band. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, we take a look inside some of the more musical offerings of this year's Tribeca Film Festival. Plus, guitar virtuosos Rodrigo y Gabriela bring their new Cuban-infused album live to our studio. Let's start, though, with the Tribeca Film Festival, which kicks off its 11th year this week, with hundreds of hours of brand new features, shorts, and documentaries, including a film called Queen, Days of Our Lives. Joining us to highlight some of this year's musical selections is the festival's director of programming, Jenna Terranova. Jenna, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, John. Thanks for
so having me. Music and film, they obviously work so well together. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing more of that happening now in the films that you cull through for the festival?
I think so. I think every year we have such a rich sort of depot to look for films and music, and not only documentaries about bands, but there's always stories. And music is such a moving force that it just naturally complements cinema, I think, so well. And you know, from documentaries about bands to music that's actually in movies. Today we'll probably talk more about the documentaries, but
Those documentaries, they tell stories, both familiar and unfamiliar. And with Queen, you know, we have like one of the most familiar bands of recent times.
Absolutely.
How extensive a film is this
thing? It's pretty extensive. I mean, it is a comprehensive doc on the band. I mean, I think it's great behind the scenes, a lot of history, music. It covers the gamut for them. So it really is a really rich documentary.
Mm-hmm. But as you were going through, you know, the films, programming this year's Tribeca Film Festival, it seems like some of the more obscure corners of the music world caught your eye.
Sure.
Tell us about El Gusto.
El Gusto is a beautiful film. It's about shabby music in Algeria that was popular in the 40s. This young filmmaker, French filmmaker, goes and travels back to find these musicians who were all together at a certain point in time in Algeria and making this music together, and then just circumstances pulled them apart. And it's a beautiful reunion story and a journey through the music and the history of that region and how there was a time where, Jews and Muslims lived harmoniously together, and how so much has changed, and music is really a beautiful bridge to sort of tell this story and bring all these men back together.
So it's kind of a Buena Vista social club kind of
thing. It is. I mean, that's a really great comparison. We've tossed that around when talking about the movie. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So it's a bunch of older guys. They're mm-hmm. between 70 and 100 years old.
Yep.
They yep. haven't played together. They're Muslims. They're Jews. They were pulled apart by the bloody and mm-hmm. violent Algerian independence war in, mm-hmm. I guess, the 60s.
Yep.
And so is it this filmmaker who is, I mean, is she actually bringing them together?
Yeah, actually, but in a very, very naturalistic way. I mean, it was really a journey for her. And you know, she started making connections, and I think it became her life mission to get all of these guys back together. And it's really moving, I mean, that they all meet each other again.
The filmmaker is Safina Bousbia. Her film is called El Gusto. And this is some of the music that these musicians made once she got them back together, the El Gusto Orchestra of Algiers.
بين الكدا وهام مثل الحمام في دوهام وديما هيمو مامو فقد الغزال المغروم بقيت غير مخمم ولا فادني تخمام مثل الحمام في دوهام وديما هيمو مامو إذا نموت بيا في الطومة لنت الحرية الصيلة على الريام زي العشيق الخام وقشف النسايا في الطوم
That is some Shabi music, spelled C-H-A-A-B-I. Shabi was popular in North Africa, especially in Algeria, in the 1940s, and it was made by Muslims and Jews who lived together and played music together. This is Abdel Hadi Halo and the El Gusto Orchestra of Algiers, and a song called Fatuma. These musicians brought together by the filmmaker, Savina Buspia, whose film El Gusto is part of this year's Tribeca Film Festival. Jenna Terranova, the director of programming for the Tribeca Film Festival, is with me, and we're talking about some of the musical offerings this year. Information on screenings is on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Jenna, before we get to some of the other films we wanted to talk about, let me just big picture here.
Sure.
How do you vet these things? I mean, how many films do you have to go through to
We had almost 6,000 submissions this year. About 2,800 were shorts films. We only do the narrative features on my side of the programming. But we have a great team, and we just watch a lot of movies, and we have a lot of discussions about these movies. And, and we also travel the world and see more movies in addition to that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a great job. We can't complain, but it can be some long
That's
hours.
A lot of, yeah, 6,000 movies. Everything that we're talking about has stood out for you from a very big crowd, mm-hmm. for one reason or another. And with El Gusto, a remarkable story of, you know, people driven apart by war and brought back together, not just by music, but by film, which mm-hmm. is a really great thing for a film festival. Then there's Searching for Sugar Man. What's the story? I mean, just bare bones here.
Yeah, here's an example of an example where music is an important part of the documentary, but it's really the story that's really most compelling, and his story. He's a musician that cut two albums in the 70s.
His name is Rodriguez. He goes by the single name Rodriguez.
Rodriguez, exactly. And they never really amounted to much here in the States, but were bootlegged in South Africa and became a huge rage and inspired a lot of people. And people just assumed that he had disappeared just the way he had been living his life. And this film takes you on the journey to sort of figure out what happened to Rodriguez. And it's really, you know, a lot of twists and turns, really interesting stuff.
Stephen Sugar Sagerman, a fan of Rodriguez in South Africa, is part of the film's search. Now, they've heard that Rodriguez has not just fallen off the face of the earth, but has committed suicide on stage. This is what they've been told. But here he explains why, even in death, Rodriguez remains so important to him.
The album was exceptionally popular. To many of us South Africans, he was the soundtrack to our lives. In the mid-70s, if you walked into a random white liberal middle-class household that had a turntable and a pile of pop records, and if you flipped through the records, you would always see Abbey Road by the Beatles, you would always see Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel, and you would always see Cold Fact by Rodriguez. To us, it was one of the most famous records of all time. The message it had was, be anti-establishment. And the one song's called the Anti-Establishment Blues. We didn't know what the word anti-establishment was until it cropped up on a Rodriguez song. And then we found out it's okay to protest against your society, to be angry with your society.
I woke out this morning with an ache in my head. I splashed on my clothes as I spilled out of bed. I opened the window to listen to the news. But all I heard was the establishment's blues. Gun sales are soaring, housewives find life boring, divorce the only answer, smoking causes cancer, the system's gonna fall soon, to an angry young tune, and that's a concrete cold fact, the Pope digs population, freedom from...
the music of Rodriguez, who came from Detroit, cut a couple of kind of psychedelic records at the turn of the 70s, did nothing here in the States, but to everyone's surprise became, as you just heard, very popular in South Africa. That guy, Steven Segerman, is looking for Rodriguez in the film Searching for Sugar Man, or looking for the completion of the story of what happened to him. Jenna, I don't want to give away the ending of the film. Suffice to say, there is a twist or two along the way. And Soundcheck listeners, if you want to know the ending, search for Rodriguez in the Soundcheck archives. I will say no more than that. The film is called Searching for Sugar Man. It's part of the Tribeca Film Festival, beginning this week here in New York. And again, a complete list of what's screening when can be found on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Jenna Terranova is director of programming at the festival. We've mentioned the Queen film, Days of Our Lives, and then a couple of more obscure musical corners with Rodriguez and the Shabi music from Algeria. I want to mention briefly Russian Winter, which is about John Forte, who's been on our program as well. Interesting story there, a guy whose career was derailed by a drug bust and years in prison. And prison, it appears in a couple of different films, but what's the story, switching gears a bit, Don't Stop Believin', Every Man's Journey, what's the story here?
Every Man's Journey, Journey decided that they wanted to go back out on tour and didn't have a lead singer and started a search for a lead singer. And people may have heard the story before, but they actually found the singer on YouTube. This guy, his name's Arnell, and he was in the Philippines, and he was a cover band singer. He was impoverished for many years. And they brought him to San Francisco and California, and they tried him out. And it's a really, really inspiring story. And his voice is incredible. I don't know if you've heard. I mean,
it's
fantastic.
Well, it's pretty much, a dead ringer for the original voice of Journey. The film is Don't Stop Believin', Every Man's Journey. And in this clip, we hear in order Journey members Neil Schon, Jonathan Cain, and Ross Valerie. And singing in the background is their potential new frontman, Arnell Pineda. Things have not been going well, but on the third day of working, something finally clicks.
The third day, he comes
desperately falling,
and he's got a voice. Then he's singing like the way I heard on YouTube, and I was impressed. Because the sound was pure. It was like, I believed it, and I thought, it's huge. His voice was huge.
I just looked at John and I go, that's it. I mean, what do you want? That's like, it's not going to get any better than that, buddy.
That's not bad.
I still try.
Goosebumps. Goosebumps. Absolutely.
That is from the film Don't Stop Believin', Every Man's Journey, the story of the band Journey and their new lead singer Arnell Pineda from the Philippines. And Jenna, they discovered him via YouTube?
They did, yeah.
And do you see the... Absolutely.
They talk all about it. Yeah, they talk all about it.
Well, that's another of the musical offerings of the Tribeca Film Festival this year. And, of course, Arnell is not the only group that came to fame through YouTube. We've got the kids from PS22 that we're going to be talking about in just a moment. But Jenna Terranova, Director of Programming for the Tribeca Film Festival, thanks for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, music films at the film festival, screenings and timings and all that is on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Here's that same song, Don't Stop Believin', sung by the kids from PS22 on Staten Island. Up next, we'll take a closer look at Once in a Lullaby, a documentary about the internet-friendly PS22 chorus that you're hearing and their journey to the Oscars. And later, speaking of more musical journeys, the Mexican guitar duo Rodriga y Gabriela went to Havana, Cuba to make their latest record. They'll bring some of that music to our New York studio later. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Among the many films being screened at the Tribeca Film Festival this year is a documentary story that unfolded right here in New York. The film is called Once in a Lullaby and tells the story of Staten Island's most well-known school choir and their journey to perform at the 2011 Academy Awards. Joining us to share the story is the film's director, Jonathan Califer, joins me here in the studio. Hi, Jonathan. So what is the story that sort of lured you into making this film?
We focus on the 2010-2011 PS22 chorus. The documentary basically follows them from the invitation that they received at their annual holiday concert from Anne Hathaway to perform at the Academy Awards through the end of that school year.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a choir that became a kind of viral video sensation. There are lots of people out there on YouTube posting, you know, videos of themselves and their friends and their kids singing. What is it, do you think, that sort of sparked this story that you ended up following?
That's a very interesting question, and that's one that I've been thinking about for the past year and a half. There is something magical about the PS22 chorus between Greg Breinberg's arrangements and what he's able to bring out of the kids.
He's the chorus master.
He is the chorus director.
And we'll speak with him in a moment, too.
And it's a very common experience I've found, through comments and emails that I've gotten. People discover the PS22 chorus on YouTube, and 2.5 hours later, they can't stop. You know, they've heard 40-something songs, and, you know, it's there is something about it, and I haven't been able to exactly locate what that is, but it has been an absolute pleasure, you know, thinking about it.
Well, it was good enough to generate millions, literally millions of YouTube hits, and now a feature-length documentary, which Jonathan Califer has directed, and the film is called Once in a Lullaby, and from the film, here's Anne Hathaway, the actress who co-hosted the 2011 Academy Awards, introducing Staten Island's PS22 chorus at the Oscars.
And as Oscar turns 83, we're reminded again how each generation rediscovers the magic of movies for themselves. And whether you're the fifth grade chorus from PS22 in Staten Island, New York, or an Oscar winner tonight, our final song reminds us that dreams really do come true.
Somewhere Over the Rainbow, sung live at the 2011 Oscars by the PS22 chorus from Staten Island. That's a clip from Jonathan Califer's film, Once in a Lullaby, the story of New York's PS22 chorus. That chorus is directed by music teacher Greg Breinberg, who joins us on the line. Greg, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks. How are you, John?
Good. So how did this whole thing happen? I mean, how did it start to get to the point where Anne Hathaway invites you to go to Hollywood and Jonathan wants to make a film about you?
Well, funny enough, I was in a chorus practice, and all of a sudden my secretary rung into the auditorium and said, you know, we have a call for you from a big Hollywood producer. I said, okay, take a message, because when I work with my chorus, nothing interrupts that work. And funny enough, again, I didn't even call him back until about 3 days later, just thinking, usually, I mean, big Hollywood opportunities and things like that, that we've been offered in the past, the Department of Ed has kind of frowned the kids participating in. So I really didn't have any expectations or hopes that this would really come of anything, but I did, of course, want to be courteous and call back. I called back, and I'm put on the phone with the producer of the 2011 Academy Awards, Bruce Cohen, who tells me he's really super excited. He's going to have the PS22 chorus not only sing at the Oscars, but close the show. And I was like, oh, that's great. Thinking, yeah, right. This is really going to happen. Flying 64 kids out to L.A., yeah. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, you know, Bruce Cohen and the Academy worked their magic. They, you know, went above, you know, to the mayor and the head of the Department of Education. And next thing I know, about a week or two later, I got another call from Bruce saying it's a done deal. And I still couldn't even digest it, but as you know, it happened, and we are very grateful that it did. It was a chance of a lifetime for the kids and, you know, for their director, too.
Yeah, I would imagine. And, of course, Jonathan Califer, following the story for the film as this is all unfolding. But I want to go back a step further than that, Greg. I mean, the fact that Bruce Cohen, the producer of the Oscars, knew about the chorus at all is down to you having posted videos on YouTube. So tell us how the program began and what you thought you were doing when you started posting those videos.
It started off with just, you know, basically people making suggestions and saying, you know, I was telling people about the work that I do. I'm a huge Tori Amos fan, so I was telling some of my Tori Amos fans that I, you know, on like the fan boards, you know, the forums, about, you know, how my chorus covering their songs. They're like, elementary school kids covering a Tori Amos song? That's just bizarre. So they were curious about it and, you know, said, you know, you should post it on YouTube. And I'm like, well, I don't have a clue about how to do that. They, you know, people were kind of directing me along the way. People on the internet were, you know, giving me advice on how to get it started. And then I took that back to my principal and said, you know, I'd really love to see what we can do about maybe starting a blog for these guys. And initially it was really just to kind of share with, you know, friends and family of chorus members. And it's just, kind of blew up. I mean, no one expected this. And
well, how usual is it to even have a chorus in a public school on Staten Island?
Unfortunately, that's a very sad question with a sad answer. That, you know, it's just few and far between. Music programs all across the board are being cut, and I'm obviously really grateful that we have had the opportunity, and, you know, furthermore, that Jonathan has helped in kind of spreading the message of, you know, the importance of music programs and, you know, and just the changes that it makes in children. You know, it's life-changing, and that's not just restricted to us and the amazing experiences we've had. It's, you know, music changes lives. It changed my life, and I never got to sing at the Oscars. So, you know, it's very important to me to keep that message at the forefront of what we're doing.
We're speaking with both Greg Breinberg, who is a music teacher at PS22 on Staten Island, and Jonathan Califer, the director of the film, the documentary Once in a Lullaby, the story of New York's PS22 chorus. And Greg's approach to teaching music apparently includes lots of improvisation and some free-form movement, which, Greg, I would imagine caused some distress among the Oscar producers on the night.
Yeah, definitely was a source of concern. Actually, it really wasn't a source of concern until about the day before the show, when all of a sudden things turned really It was very, very, it was, I can't even think of the word. It was just very scary because all of a sudden our performance, in my eyes, was being threatened by, just becoming this homogenized, typical choir performance, which is not what we are and not what we're about and not what I teach the kids. So it was a very scary moment for me when I heard that they, wanted to change our method of performance for the Oscars.
Well, here are two of the PS22 chorus members. This is Azaria and Denise, and they're talking about the way they approach performing in the chorus, improvising, and doing a bit of singing.
Improv is this thing about something you feel from the heart, something that you feel from the soul. It's easier when somebody else is with you, like Denise. For me is like a total change. It's different from being in the chorus. And fantastic Azaria here. She gives me all these ideas, and I know I really thank her for that. When I improvise, it comes just strangely easier. I don't know, it's pretty much easier than when I'm reading songs from a paper. It's the thing that teaches me to learn more music.
Improv session there from the kids of the PS22 chorus on Staten Island. That's a clip from Jonathan Califer's film Once in a Lullaby. Greg Breinberg is the director of the chorus. There's a sold-out screening with Q&A this Sunday at the School of Visual Arts, and then further screenings as part of the Tribeca Film Festival, Jonathan?
Unfortunately, that's our only screening at Tribeca. We do, the first weekend in June, we'll be screening in New Jersey at the New Jersey International Film Festival, which I'm very excited to do, my home state. And hopefully many more screenings coming in the near future.
Now, what about the individual? I mean, you're not just following a chorus. These are, these are young people, and some of them have pretty complicated stories.
Yes, there are 64 children in the chorus, and each one of them was absolutely amazing. I mean, it was so wonderful getting to know these kids. We did focus down on four or five students, and they each had very interesting stories about the way that the chorus helped them. The one student in particular from the clip that you just played, which I'm so happy you played, it's one of my favorite clips. It was an improv that I walked in on with my gear while they were just beginning and had to get my camera set up very quickly, and it was chills down my spine. The improv, I am a big fan of improv in music and poetry and life, actually, but not only, the melodies that they were singing together, but the lyrics in that are just so touching. One of the students, Azaria, was one of the students that we focused on, and she had a story that was really a testament to how powerful the chorus program in her school is. She and her family were unfortunately homeless for a time, and were bouncing around shelters and places to stay in Manhattan, and even through that, she was continuing to commute over 2 hours to PS22 so that she could be in chorus.
Wow. So when Greg was saying before how it affects people's lives, in Azaria's case, it's a real tangible effect, as we hear in this clip from the film.
Think of me in the depths of your despair, making home that rhythm, my true love is there. Before I was discovered in PS22, I knew I could sing, but I would never really let that happen because, there was a lot of kids that would tease me because of my birthmark. There was, a lot of pressure I was dealing with. When I came to PS22, Mr. B, he helped me understand music in a different way that I never understood it before.
All right, Mr. B, Greg Breinberg, the music teacher behind the chorus at PS22. Let me ask you just, Greg, do you have to be concerned with too much fame too soon for kids who are too young to be able to handle it?
I think, you know, I've discussed this before, that it's just basically a wonderful thing, and one of the most wonderful aspects of the chorus is that we are really not fostering, you know, and we're not breeding, you know, child stars. They have these amazing opportunities, but in between, you know, they have homework, they have schoolwork, mm-hmm. they have to, you know, do their, you know, they have responsibilities outside of the chorus. The brunt of the work falls on me to put everything together, and I, you know, I happily accept that role, but I am very, very conscious to make sure that these kids do not, you know, have to deal with the trappings of child star fame. I mean, basically, you know, they're in their own little bubble here at PS22. I mean, they don't walk around school like they are, you know, the kings and the queens of the school. They are, you know, they're just ordinary kids in a music program.
And at what grade
really
do they leave?
The outside, you know, world that really recognizes what they're doing. But in here, you know, we do our best to really, I don't want to say downplay their accomplishments, but just kind of keep everything in perspective.
Yeah, yeah. And at what grade do they leave you?
They're fifth grade. They come for 1 year, they leave, and we get a brand new batch. And every year we start from scratch.
Wow. All right. Well, Greg, that's a heck of a program you've got going there in Staten Island. Congratulations, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. You've got a heck of a director sitting next to you as well.
That's Jonathan Califer, the director of the documentary Once in a Lullaby, the story of New York's PS22 chorus. Jonathan, thank you for joining us today and sharing the story with us as well.
Thank you. It's been an absolute thrill.
Here are the kids again doing the Gotcha song, Somebody That I Used to Know, from the kids at PS22 on Staten Island. That's the Gautier hit, Somebody That I Used to Know, and still to come, the Mexican guitar duo Rodrigo y Gabriela plays as a quartet with their band in the Soundcheck studio. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The Mexican guitar duo Rodrigo y Gabriela took an unusual route to success. They started as a failed heavy metal band in Mexico City, then took to busking on the streets of Dublin, then sold over 1 million copies of records with their blend of acoustic rock and flamenco. Now their journey has taken them to Havana, where they recorded new versions of some of their old songs with a Cuban orchestra. We'll talk with them in a minute, but first, let's hear something that came out of those Havana sessions. Here is Rodrigo y Gabriela with Santo Domingo live on Soundcheck. Thank you.
That is Rodrigo y Gabriela live on Soundcheck with their song Santo Domingo. The two of them playing guitars, Rodrigo Sanchez, Gabriela Lopez. It's been a long time since you guys were last on the program. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Gabriela, you're giving new meaning to the term rhythm guitar over there, all the percussive stuff that you're doing on the instrument.
Yes.
So that's no need for a drummer when you're able to, like, rap on the body of the instrument and all that
well,
kind of stuff.
We always kind of like to have drummers around, so they're always welcome anyway.
Which you certainly had an opportunity to do with this this project called Area 52, which was done in Havana. I wanted to ask you, though, about the piece we were hearing at the top of the segment, because there was some sitar, some Indian sitar. That's Anushka Shankar playing that, right?
Yes.
Rodrigo, so she was a part of this session in Havana as well?
Yes, we had a few guests apart from all the Cuban orchestra, among them was Anushka, which is a good friend of mine. And so we've been trying to do something together. But, I mean, we are normally on tour and busy, and now she has a baby.
Right.
But we were...
She actually brought her baby here on tour with her when she was in New York.
Like last week, I think.
Yes, that's right.
So, we're delighted having her on the album.
But the real kind of focus on this album is this 13-piece Cuban orchestra that the two of you worked with. So what was the idea behind this project? You took older songs of yours. What made you want to revisit them like this?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that locally we have a part of that orchestra with us here today, mm-hmm. which is Alex Wilson on the piano and Alfredo Echeverria on the bass guitar. And, it was the idea behind it came out of our some sort of like self-indulgence idea to an orchestra playing our music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And well, we didn't have the opportunity to have that dream come true because we were touring so much. But once the 11/11 album was totally promoted and toured all over, we had holidays. And mm-hmm. then me and Rodrigo decided to go to Cuba and have a musical holidays in the studio with the orchestra, with Alex. And it was just fantastic. And we love it there.
So 11/11 was about 3 years ago, right? That album.
Right. Yeah.
And so this has been a while in the making, and now here you are back out on tour playing a sold out show with this band at Radio City Music Hall on April 20th. Are you playing with the full band? I mean, we've had major problems here in this country getting visas for musicians to come in, and yes. here you are trying to bring musicians from Cuba. Yes. Were you able to do that?
Yeah, we were able to do that. We are playing with six of them, but not because the other ones couldn't get in. I mean, we just decided that format was enough for mm-hmm. for us to bring the tour, and they are amazing. I mean, we have trumpets and sax, and we have a percussion and drums and tres, and
which is
this
the
session,
little
yeah the guitar
like instrument
guitar,
yeah.
yeah.
So and the title Area 52, what does that refer to?
Well, it's a reference to obviously to this Area 51 thing that
the UFO thing. Yeah,
yeah, but you know
this is the next area over.
Yeah. Can explain that live on radio.
But it is always like a joke, you know, and it's also. It plays with the idea of some restricted areas in the minds about some certain kinds of music. As me and Rodrigo, we have played, I don't know, we can play Metallica piece along with Take Five. And that's breaking the rules, you know, in mm-hmm. a way. So this is totally restricted area because now we are with a Cuban orchestra playing who knows what kind of music me and Rodrigo play anyway, you know. It's just a joke some sort of way.
Well, and one that people are taking pretty seriously, the Area 52 project from Rodrigo y Gabriela, kind of a scaled-down version of that band with us in the studio today. You want to do Hanuman next?
Yeah, this is Hanuman. Absolutely.
This is, speaking of, you know, breaking boundaries, this piece is a tribute to Carlos Santana.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Right, let's hear a live performance from Rodrigo y Gabriela and Friends live on Soundcheck. That, once again, is Rodrigo y Gabriela, live on soundcheck with Alvaredo Achavarria playing the bass and Alex Wilson at the piano. Rodrigo y Gabriela's latest record is called Area 52, and Alex did a lot of the arrangements.
Everything.
For that,
all the Cuban arrangements are Alex Wilson, mm-hmm. So which is an amazing musician.
So you've got the band called Cuba,
yes.
C-U-B-A, Collective Universal Band Association. helping out on the record, and various other friends. We mentioned Anushka. Now, Gabriela, you mentioned before that you and Rodrigo, you know, you've played everything from Metallica to Dave Brubeck. That piece that you just played, Hanuman, is a tribute to Carlos Santana. 1111, the album you mentioned before, mm-hmm. That title track was kind of a tribute to Pink Floyd, right?
Yeah, that was a tribute to Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
Well, yes, it is this idea that... at the beginning of our career, me and Rodrigo, we had no career, you know. We just decided to travel and play the music, mm-hmm. and with no expectations of anything. So, and I guess all this music that we love to hear, which is a wide range of styles and genres of music, somehow filter in, so in your own playing and start to come up organically. And that's the kind of idea. So we don't have these divisions in our heads when we are playing. And I think that's right. Important.
Is there anything that you've wanted to play that you haven't been able to make work for the two guitars?
Well, flamenco.
Flamenco, really?
Yeah. I mean, that's very specific style of playing and amazing. You know, we love flamenco, but it's pretty complicated.
Well, I mean,
I haven't even tried.
Yes.
But you can sort of hear echo. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that to hear that you love flamenco. I mean, I think you can hear that in the way you guys play. But I know what you mean. That is a very kind of
strict tradition.
Congratulations on Area 52, the new record. I should also mention that Rodrigo y Gabriela have contributed to the soundtracks of some recent films, Pirates of the Caribbean Part 4, right?
Yes. Yes.
And the animated Puss in Boots. And
yes.
Then there is the Friday night sold-out event at Radio City Music Hall. Rodrigo, Gabriela, thank you both for
being with us on Soundcheck.
Thank you.
And a little bit from the album Area 52 in the background, going to wrap things up for us today. Tomorrow on Soundcheck, the director of the New York-based Music and Memory Project joins us to look at the role that music can play in elder care, particularly in the lives of those with dementia. Plus, band leader Johnny Colon joins us to look at Boogaloo's past and present. And don't forget, 1 week from today, we'll be live in the green space with guitarist Khaki King and the string band Punch Brothers, led by mandolinist Chris Thiele. And you can be there, too, next Wednesday, April 25th, live at 2 p.m. Visit the Soundcheck page for details, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn with Margaret Bresnahan. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer, and we had help today from Josh Rogozin. I'm John Schaefer. Be with us again tomorrow for the next Soundcheck.